Get it going here, everybody. My name is Tanner Dawson, the Whiskey Sports Podcast and the Sports Buffoons. Join with me is Nick Botkins of the Botkins Show. What's up, Nick?
What's up, man? It is another beautiful Monday. Man, today was beautiful, at least on my side of Missouri. Not too sure.
I was here on my side.
All right. Hey.
In KC world, man, I ended up walking about 5 miles total today.
Nice, so, nice.
Yeah. Mile on lunch. And then after work, ended up walking around with the wife and daughter for a mile. And then after they went to dance, I went out for almost a I went out for a 3 mile walk. So, you know, I definitely took advantage of it.
Yeah, same. It was a beautiful day out. I think hopefully we'll get another few more days. So, you know,
I know. And then that pesky cold stuff starts returning.
Yeah, this is a fake spring. You know, this is fake.
It's gonna be a fake spring for the next few, or I guess this is fake spring. It'll be a ruined spring in the next few weeks,
right?
Until hopefully April gets nice. I hope it's nice because when I go up to Milwaukee in the first week of April, I'm really, really hoping for some good weather. But we'll see. We'll see. So, guys, we got quite the show for you today. We'll talk about the NHL's trade impact. There was tons of moves that happened after the show last Monday. A lot of stuff that Jim called out as well. So we're going to get his thoughts on that. We're probably going to talk a little wrestling with him right before he jets. And then we'll bring Jonathan on. We'll talk some World Baseball Classic. I got the power rankings brought up here. We're talking about some of the dropouts and if that does impact any of these countries here that are participating. And then we'll get his thoughts today of the Derek Carr signing for the New Orleans Saints, because he is a New Orleans Saints fan. So we have to know Jonathan's thoughts into this. And then we'll continue next week on breaking down more of baseball's division. So,
I mean, if you're Jonathan, you got to be pretty happy. And we really could talk when Jim here in just a minute about the Giants. Looks like them and Danny Dimes is about to agree to a deal. So
I don't want to talk about anything until it's on paper, because I don't believe any of that smack until I see a signed deal. It's just like the Lamar Jackson thing right now. You know, they're like, oh, well, we might have to franchise tag him. I'm going to wait till I see officially that franchise tag hits and there's no trade happening, a silent trade.
It's happening. It's happening. That franchise tag's happening. I think they're going to give him the let him go out, see the market, and then they can match it. And you know what I mean? Or let him get the picks.
Right. That's true. That's true. It'll be that's a situation obviously everybody's waiting on. So, all right, let's bring him in. Let's bring in the man, Jim Behringer.
Jim, what's up? We forgot to say the man who had Kane to the Rangers before anybody else.
There it was.
Eat your heart out. I don't know who the Adam Schefter is in the NHL world, but by God, it might as well be Jim Behringer. So, Schefty Jr. here of the hockey world giving us the Behringer bombs. What else you got for us after last week's? You know, you were dropping bombs left and right, Jim. As far as Kane to the Rangers, you had a couple other ones there.
Guys, thanks for having me in tonight. It's a pleasure, as always, to join you here on a Monday. Yes, thank you, humbled, as always, with the Behringer bomb of Kane to the Rangers. The worst-kept secret in the hockey world, except I told you first. So, you know, no, it was crazy, you know. I was talking with a bunch of people, and we were saying this is probably the most active pre-deadline in a while, you know, with so many big name moves out there. And, you know, it felt like it was the NBA trade deadline. You know, the NHL kind of took star power now with it, you know, with the Tarasenko's going, the Myers, the Canes, just up and down so many big name moves that when Friday came, it was kind of a relaxing day. There were minor moves. A lot of depth players moved. Probably the big name was John Klingberg going to Minnesota. Jordan Greenway went to Buffalo. But outside of those, it wasn't too crazy. And that's a good thing because, you know, you had 38 trades beforehand.
That's not a lie there.
Yeah.
There was like even more that happened even after the first, right? You know, Jonathan Quick going to Columbus there.
Yeah. You know, the late night.
Yeah. Right. I was like, wow, I can't believe that the Kings were trading away, but they ended up getting, you know, Vladislav that we talked about too last Monday.
Yeah, Gavrikov, yeah, the defenseman. Yeah. And then they bring in Korpisalo as well. And good on Columbus for doing the right thing with Quick because, you know, they trade him to Vegas. Quick was never going to Columbus. And that trade, like, happened after the Kings beat the Jets in the shootout. So they make the trade. They don't even inform him until the trade happens. So it's kind of like, because Jonathan Quick, what happened is talk with people in L.A., they were saying, you know, Quick was figuring he was going to get the Dustin Brown treatment, you know, with everything going out. He's going to finish his contract there, get the statue, the banner up. And he probably will get the banner up eventually. But I think there's some, you know, feelings that have to be mended and some things like that. But it's funny that he's in Vegas because, you know, it'd be crazy to think that those two teams could meet up in a Stanley Cup playoffs and Quick goes up against his former team. I think Quick still has something left in the tank, to be honest. And, you know, if he can get in the playoffs and Vegas is healthy, look out because, you know, you have a Conn Smythe Trophy winner in there. Anything is possible in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Right. My next one here, we talked about the Hurricanes, right? They weren't really, there wasn't a lot of rumors going on, not a lot of moves happening. But they did inquire, you know, Shane Gostisbehere. I can't say his. I don't know.
Shane Gostisbehere.
Gostisbehere?
Yeah.
Hasshouse? Oh my gosh. That's way
easier. Yeah. Yeah.
I tell you, some of these last names just throw me off. I could probably get the first name. After that, it might be trouble.
Yeah. I'm the awful. Jim, outside of the trade deadline, I noticed here the Lightning have lost three in a row. Benched some starters in the third period against, I think it was the Canucks, maybe.
Sabres. And they've lost five straight.
What's going on with the team that a lot of people still have as kind of being the Stanley Cup? You know, they made this run the last, what, three years or so. What's going on there? Is trouble in the house there?
Look, I'm not going to – it's like with the Patriots when they were rolling and everything. You don't count them out until you count them out. And, you know, we've heard this narrative before about the Lightning. Hey, they lose a bunch of things. That's what I put on Twitter yesterday. I was like, so the overreaction going to be on Monday that the Lightning not going to do well in the playoffs this year. I mean, they always find a different gear. They always find a different way. They're going through a spell right now. This is what happens when you play a lot of hockey. They went 3 years in a row and made deep runs. Guys are beat up. Guys are banged up. Guys aren't going to play at their best. But as Cooper said, Stamkos said after, there's standards in this room that these guys got to live up to right now. Offense isn't clicking. Defensively, look, I said going into the season, Tampa's defense was going to be an area of concern because of the loss of Ryan McDonagh. They had to trade away a guy who blocked shots, who was the leader of that defense. I don't care if anybody says about Victor Hedman and guys like that. Sergachev's in a new role. Other guys on that defense are in new roles, eating more minutes. If they had a McDonagh, maybe something gets settled down in the room. He was a captain. He understands what goes on. They're missing that right now. And you could see in Nashville right now, you could see them, you know, even though they were a seller, they're still in the playoff picture. McDonagh's played a key part of it. I think the Lightning will be fine. They still have the best goalie in the world in Andrei Vasilevsky. Does this give Toronto hope in the first round of the playoffs? Again, I'll believe it when I see it when Toronto wins the first round series. If I had to choose a team, I'm still taking Tampa because Vasilevsky, I don't trust Toronto's goaltending. But Tanner mentioned Carolina. And yeah, they didn't make the big sexy splash, but they picked up two guys in Jesse Puljujarvi and Shane Gostisbehere who are going to be probably sneaky good plays, sneaky good pickups, and Carolina's going to continue to roll with those guys. And Puljujarvi's got friends that are on the team he's played with. Gostisbehere is a cheaper version of Tony D'Angelo from last year, and Carolina's the second-best team in the league right now behind Boston. But any concern for the Lightning? Maybe a little bit, but I'm not going to overreact because I've seen this story before, and Tampa always seems to turn it around.
You mentioned Boston. Boston won, what, their 10th in a row. What makes them so damn good? Why are they the best team in the league right now?
everything's working for them right now. I mean, the guys they bring in from Dmitry Orlov, who's 9 points in four games, the first star of the week. You know, you bring in a Garnet Hathaway, you bring in Tyler Bertuzzi, just guys that are Bruin-type players, big, physical, nasty players. Bergeron is back. It's like they know this was the year that everything had to click for them. Linus Omark scores a goal. You know, he's going to probably win the Vezina. Just everything, you know, different dynamic in the room with Jim Montgomery. And, you know, there looks like they're having fun out there. Guys are bonding. They understand what's at stake. But they have to close the deal. And, you know, we see, you know, Golden State had that great season. They lost to Cleveland in the NBA Finals. Chicago had the great season. They finished the job. There's a lot of pressure on Boston to finish this thing. To me, it's a disappointment if they don't win the Stanley Cup because just the historic season. But everything seems to click. It's funny. The beginning of the year, we talked about Boston with the injuries. They have to overcome this, be alive. What do they do? Don't worry about any of that stuff. Hampus Lindholm will jump in. All these guys will jump in and be fine. David Pastrnak gets his new extension. And Boston's just rolling. I mean, it's crazy to think you would expect some type of lull, which they have, but then they just win 10 straight.
Isn't it usually a curse, though, in hockey to be the best team, like to have the most points? Isn't that usually like a curse?
Yeah, the President's Trophy curse. As they say, you know, last time the team that won the President's Trophy won the Stanley Cup was the 2013 Chicago Blackhawks, and before that was Detroit Red Wings in 2002. So, you know, it's tough, but I don't think this team can be stopped. I think they're going to make the Stanley Cup final. I just don't see anybody in the East competing with them. Now, look, Ottawa's playing well. The Islanders are playing better. The Senators are hot. They've won 5 straight. You know, if they can get in, you never know. Ottawa's always played Boston pretty well. But I think the talent there for Boston is just too deep. And you could just see what they did to the Rangers. They just beat you down physically. And they just find different ways to win hockey games.
I'm pretty sure that Boston is the quickest to get to 100 points by one game. And that Montreal Canadian team went to the Stanley Cup and won it that year. They did it in 62 games.
Yes, they did. That was, I believe, the 76 Habs.
Look at us, Tanner. Look at us.
I think it's on their side. If history's already made point of like, hey, you did it there in 62 games. They did it in 61.
But it's also different. But also different. 62 games for the Canadians, there's also no shootouts and no overtime point too. So they had a lot of ties in there, but that's those Canadian teams of the 76 Canadians, 77 Canadians, you know, they just beat up everybody. I mean, that those teams were loaded with Hall of Famers. And obviously this Bruins team is going to have Hall of Famers too. But I mean, everything's just clicking right now for this Bruins team. And yeah, I think history's on their side and I think they can get there. Except the East is just such a gauntlet.
Oh, it is by far.
I mean, but they got, I mean, is it like in basketball? Like they got so many points already, 103. The next team, Toronto's got 84 in their division. Like how long do they have any points they need to like clinch, I guess?
That's what I don't understand is how they didn't clinch a playoff spot yet. Like,
right?
like the team has 103 points and they haven't clinched a playoff spot yet. Like, is the league just afraid to just put an X or a Y next to them because they already know they're in the playoffs? Like, I don't understand it. They probably have like a couple games left to do it because it's based on the wild card and everything. But still, this team is a playoff team. They're going to the playoffs. They're going to Stanley Cup playoffs. Carolina is going to be there too. You know, and everything else. So it's going to be crazy. But yeah, Boston to me, home ice advantage throughout everything. And, you know, like I said, if they don't win a Stanley Cup, very, very disappointing.
Yeah. You would think that clinch is coming in shortly here.
You would think Boston. Next couple of games.
I mean, they're easily 20 points over Toronto, like clinch them up in the division. Like can Toronto make up 20 points from now to the season?
I mean, the thing is I think there's like 20 games left. So I think there's like,
I think 2025. So we're legit in like the final
Yeah. The final section of the season. Yeah. And I think they can technically Toronto can still catch Boston if Boston goes on a
like Boston lose all 25 of the next games. Yeah, like, that's possible. You know,
I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's happening. It's ridiculous what the Bruins are doing. But that's a class credit to their organization, credit to the guys in the room, the leadership. We see it in other sports. I mean, you get the room, you have guys. And I think the best thing that happened to them was that little five-game stretch they had throughout the All-Star break where they were losing. The coaches get the room back. They're able to handle it. And the thing is everybody's like, oh, they haven't handled adversity. What? They didn't have Brad Marchand or Charlie McAvoy to begin the year. Yeah, I think they've handled adversity. So
I think they might be all right.
Yeah, I think they are all right in that category.
Man, you know what that sounds like? That sounds like Stephen A. and some of them other on the ESPN channel complaining that the Patrick Mahomes has never played a road game in the playoffs, and they bash him for it. You know, that's what it sounds like. You didn't face adversity. Okay, well, it's not.
Yeah, but he's won a fucking two Super Bowl. I mean, he lost the AFC Championship game twice. Like, that's pretty adversity. You know what I mean? So what he is, you're punishing him or give him a knock on this record because he's got the like. They're doing right. good. You know what I mean?
They've won what? They've gone to four straight AFC championship games all at home. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Super Bowls in those four AFC championships.
Yes, like,
but I mean, never a real playoff game. So we don't know how good Patrick Mahomes is yet. So,
but he's he's played three neutral site playoff games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
And won two of them. Wait. Technically, he did play a road playoff game.
What would that be? Which?
The Super Bowl against Tampa.
Oh, it was.
It was in Tampa.
Yeah.
Technically, if you want to say he did it, he technically did play a road playoff game.
That's still one of the dumbest things I've ever seen, but, you know, that's what it is. But, yeah, I mean, that's what I feel like. When teams are doing good, they always try to find something negative to harp on, and you know, it's just like, but they did have stuff, and or they're too good, and yeah, it hasn't bothered them. Obviously, it hasn't affected anything, so
no,
I don't get it.
Well, that's because we're trying to find a hole in the game and get something to talk about. Like, that's the way it is with players, too. Well, you know, like, he doesn't do this, or they were just trying to find a hole in the game instead of, you know, complimenting them, be like, hey, and appreciating their greatness or that team's greatness. So we're trying to find a hole and to knock them down.
I believe Michael Jordan said it in a clip I saw the other day, was the press works off of negative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're always trying to find
something. That's what shares the storylines. You know what I mean? That's what, you know,
but you could flip it on the other side too. Cause Boston, this is a historic season, something we haven't seen in a long time. You know, you look at that, and that's kind of the narrative they're playing with Connor McDavid. It's like, you know, this kid's about to hit 70 goals. He's the best player in the league. Like, I mean, yeah, he's hit 53 now. I mean, he's on pace for 70, maybe even more. Is it as great as Gretzky's 92 in one season? And, you know, I mean, just the fact that you're going to have potentially most likely back-to-back 60 goal scorers in this modern NHL is something to you have to cherish. And you're like, oh, my God, Connor McDavid, what he's doing. You know, just the passing, the scoring, he just improves his game like Crosby does. And, you know, there was talk like, you know, when KD was on the Warriors, oh, you know, like it's like, oh, Connor may not even be the best player on his team. Like, he's the best player in the league and he's the best player in the world. Leon Draisaitl is a great player, but he's not Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid is on a different level. And if he does, and I agree with guys I listen to, like on the radio and people I talk to, if he's not unanimously selected as the MVP of the league, there's a problem. Like, there's a big time problem for what he's doing this year. And, you know, the Oilers are in a playoff spot in the West. You know, Pacific's open. They could have a chance to win a division out West. He's put his team on his back. You know, goaltending, you know, with Campbell, you know, can they get it down? You know, they made the trade for Ekholm. Their power play seems to be clicking better. You know, we'll see what they do there. But, you know, going back East, I mean, it is a gauntlet in the Eastern Conference. It is a gauntlet.
So how do you feel as a New Jersey Devils fan? Because you acquired Curtis Lazar from the Canucks. You didn't lose anybody really off of that deal. I know you. I think you acquired somebody else.
Yeah, Timo Meyer. We talked about
Timo. That's right. Yeah, I was Timo. Trying to like. I missed
Timo time.
I talked about before by myself. Timo. Yeah. So how do you feel? How do you feel as a Devils fan right now?
I mean, look, the New Jersey Devils did what they had to do. You know, everybody had kind of expected the Timo Meyer acquisition, and all Devils fans were praying that it was going to happen because usually the Devils don't close those kind of deals. But now you had guys like Nico was in the ear of the general manager. The general manager identified this player going back a while. So now he comes in. He's already made an impact, scored a goal. He's got camaraderie with the guys in there. Lazar is a great player. You know, I mean, you know, not great, but he's a great versatile player.
Yeah.
Bottom guy. He can play penalty kill, face-offs, plays both like center and wing. So he has flexibility in this lineup now. In New Jersey, you know, they're playing with house money right now. Yeah, they may be a year ahead of schedule. Goaltending's been, you know, good. You know, defensively, I think they have to clean up some turnovers. But you're going into playoffs and you have a difference maker in your lineup that, you know, you can win around. Maybe two. Who knows? I mean, you never know in the Stanley Cup playoffs what's going to happen.
It's true. It's true. And Timo already scored a goal yesterday, I believe.
Yes, he did.
Right? Yeah.
Yes, he did.
That was nice to see. I mean, that's kind of what you want if you're, you know, as a Devils fan here. That's what you want to see. You want to see results quick, and you want to see that it executes right away.
Yeah, and you get a player that could play with Jack Hughes now, score a big physical body that goes with Brat. Those guys, I mean, when you have a top line like Tatar, Heischer, and Dawson Mercer, who had an 8-game goal streak come to an end, you know, 10 goals over those 8 games, you know, now you have two quality scoring lines that are a threat. Then you have your bottom six guys that are, you know, middle six, bottom six players that can bang and be physical and create chances as well. Overall, Devils got a good team. Things are coming together for them, and Tom Fitzgerald's done things the right way.
Jim, is there like the biggest win? Give me like the biggest winner you have at the trade deadline and the biggest loser you have. Maybe a team that either didn't pull the trigger on a trade or a trade you were like, what the hell are they doing?
So I think, you know, to me, if you look at, you know, the winners in this thing, I mean, you know, people, you could say easy, it's Boston because of the guys they brought in, Orlov, Hathaway, you know, Bertuzzi, because they fit right in. And I think they are. But I look at a team like, you know, obviously New Jersey, what they did as well. But a team like Toronto, to me, they addressed areas of need with Ryan O'Reilly. Unfortunately, he broke his finger the other night. Yeah. But Nola Chari, Jake McCabe. Yeah, they changed some things up defensively. They changed up some things offensively, got bigger, got stronger, had some more grit, size, sandpaper to this team. And, you know, it's good to see because Kyle Dubas' job, I'm not going to say it was on the line, but he doesn't have a contract for next year. This team has underperformed in the playoffs. They've been rolling pretty much with the same team for 7 years now. And you know what? They have to make inroads in the playoffs. And when they get physically beat up by teams in their own division, they had to make changes. Did they make too many changes? We'll see. But I like the additions that they made. As far as on the flip side of things, you know, two teams stand out to me. I think Florida and Calgary didn't do enough or didn't do anything. Florida especially. I know they're in this stand pack kind of thing in the Eastern Conference. But they took such a drop off from last year that they could have sold, and I'm not sure if they can make the playoffs, or maybe they could have added something and just put them over the edge. They didn't really do anything. Same on Calgary out west. You see teams around them like the Detroits, the Nashvilles, the St. Louis's, the Washington's making moves, and Calgary didn't do anything. Yeah, they made one trade, but they're not getting in the playoffs. The chemistry's just not there. I understand Bradford Living made a lot of trades in the offseason, but the goaltending isn't consistent enough, and the team is just underperforming, and I think maybe a little bit of a shakeup at the deadline maybe would have kicked this thing going again. They're not out of it mathematically, but to me, if they start a couple more game losses, this is over for the Calgary Flames this year in the Western Conference.
Very cool. All right, we got about 5 minutes left with you. Nick, I'll let you guys talk a little. AEWF last night, right?
Yeah. Jim was kind of talking. I said kind of before the show, I wasn't on the AEW. Just I watched it. I didn't watch it live. I watched it back this morning. I wasn't really looking forward to a lot of things. I thought it was a good show, but I just didn't have that buzz or like where I was like, man, I got to watch it live. I don't want to miss this. I don't know how you felt the card went. I really enjoyed the trios match. I really wasn't interested in MJF versus Bryan Danielson, the Iron Man match, but I thought it kind of went as I expected for the most part, as far as, you know, the way the matches went. I'd like to see what happened now with the Bucks or even Adam Cole. Like, I feel like there's unfinished business and there's just so many questions to me that AEW hasn't answered.
Yeah, I mean, I thought overall, I actually thought it was a really good show from top to bottom. I thought the pacing was a little better than normal shows. I thought the Texas Death Match was a violent, bloody brawl, which is exactly what I expected it to be. I like the fact that so many younger talent went over last night. Like we've seen in years past, like the Omegas would continue to go over to Bucks, guys like that.
Jericho.
Right. But it was the Starks, it was the Wardlows, it was guys like MJF retained the title. I didn't think Danielson was going to win. But I thought, you know, I watched the rest of the match, and I thought it was a great Iron Man match. I thought it was one of the better Iron Man matches I've seen. It was really goodly paced. You know, obviously expected MJF to win, cheat, and everything like that, extra time. It was good. I agree. I thought the Trios match was excellent. I like the fact that the House of Black won the Trios title. Gives them, you know, a purpose now. I mean, I think they needed something to put them over the edge. I like it. The fact that they thought that the Bucks and the Elite were the poison of everything, kind of like, I like that storyline that was going in there. You know, the Jericho Starks thing was really good. You know, Jamie Hayter, the women's match was actually pretty decent. You know, Ruby Soho turning heel. You know, AEW, you know, they're, you know, Revolution always seems to kick things off for them as they head towards Double or Nothing. I thought it was a good show. And, you know, again, MJF is the champ. He's got a lot of challengers ahead. There's a lot of unfinished business now that FTR is back. And I hope they put the titles on FTR right away because they're the top of that tag division.
Yeah, that was good to see them back. I hope that they're – I don't know what happened with their contracts. Allegedly, they might be up next month in April.
No, they signed long-term. They signed long-term.
So they are done. They are AEW long-term.
Yeah.
Okay. Hadn't seen anything about that. So, like, I think that's kind of why they weren't on Revolution. They were trying to get this deal done. So I guess they turned down WWE because – we know that they were offered there. I was surprised that they didn't go back to WWE, especially with Hunter running the show because he was kind of their guy for a little bit. But good to see FTR. Yeah, I'm not a fan of the Ass Boys. I actually love the Acclaimed. I enjoyed them and instead of the Ass Boys. But go ahead. I would have liked to see the Acclaimed in FTR, but the Bucks have been – or not the Bucks, but the Guns have been giving that FTR a lot of shit. So – just let FTR beat them down and get the titles.
Look, for me, I think the big thing let's get this tag division back to where it was. You know, with one team running the show for a while, long, healthy title reigns. Not enough. I don't want to see no more rematches. There's enough teams in that division where you could have tag team matches every week, get the rankings back up and go from there. And that's something I would like to see. And with FTR there now, look out, they're going to be, you know, their best tag team in the world for a reason. So, but overall, I thought it was a good show. You know, AEW still has some things to do. I think their women's storyline with the Outsiders and the Originals is actually pretty good. If it happens, we could say another Behringer bomb, but I have a feeling that there's going to be a women's Blood and Guts match. And it's going to be involving that little storyline that they have.
Ooh, I like that. We haven't seen that. So I would take that. I would take that. I like that idea.
Yeah. So, I mean, you never know. But that's where I see this heading. Could go completely different route. But I just, the seeds are there for that. And who knows? The way MJF was talking in his press conference, maybe we'll see CM Punk back too.
Hey. Well, that was the best rivalry going for a long time. I loved that. And that was like, that. I told you before, I'm a big storyline person. I got it. I like watching some wrestlers for their in-ring ability, but like for me to really get into it, that's the storylines. And this going into Revolution, there wasn't a whole lot of storylines where I was buying into, but I did enjoy the show. Like I said, I'm kind of with you. I'm glad a lot of the younger talent the homegrown AEW talent, more or less. You know, Ricky Starks is a homegrown guy. Wardlow, homegrown. Jungle Boy, homegrown. Like, I'm glad to see those guys get their due and get their wins, because AEW needs to start building their stars back up, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure, 100% on that. But yeah, the homegrown talent goes over. And if Punk comes back, don't forget, you got MJF, you got the Omega, you can have a trios match. You can have so many little things that go on with Punk being back, if and when he comes back. I hope he does, because I feel like if they can bury the hatchet with Thunder Rosa in the backstage, I think you can bury the hatchet here and just don't put him on camera anymore in the backstage, and I think everything will be fine.
Yeah, I don't like that stuff. I don't know. Maybe I'm a old school. I miss kayfabe. I don't like the media scrum stuff afterwards. WWE starting to do it now, and I just don't. I don't like it. I don't understand it. I don't know. I guess maybe they're trying to be like more sports oriented.
Yeah,
getting basketball, football, and stuff, everything else, but. I'm a maybe old school, keep kayfabe alive type, type thing.
Yeah, I like it. Keep kayfabe alive, and I could read about it, whatever. You want to have a one-on-one interview, that's fine. But, yeah, it's kind of over the top. But overall, good show. You know, Road to WrestleMania is on. But, you know, again, just a lot of things going on in NHL. We're stretched towards the playoff. Let's see who gets in. So many things going on, and breaking news last week, and you know, maybe we'll get another one.
Real quick, Tanner didn't want me to ask you, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Thoughts on Danny Dimes headed back to the Giants?
Look, again, I agree with Tanner until it's official, but they're working on it, working on a deal with Danny Dimes. That's going to be – they can get him locked down before tomorrow night, and they don't have to franchise tag him. That'll be huge in getting Barkley re-signed. And keep some of the band back together, because the Giants need to keep these players.
They can keep Galloway,
He's out. He's gone. He got cut. Oh, bye.
God. Yeah, he's gone. He ain't coming.
I didn't save him like $50 million on the cap, you know.
Gone. Bye.
Oh my lord. I don't know. I don't know if I would even waste a tag on Danny Dimes, honestly.
He's asking for more than his tag, though.
Yeah, I know. I know what he's asking for. That's what I'm saying. I wouldn't spend a tag. Let alone wouldn't pay him.
So Geno Smith got, 3 years, $50 million.
Yep.
You giving Danny Dimes that money?
No. 100% no.
He had one good year.
So did Geno.
Geno had one good year. It wasn't even a good year. It was a decent year that did enough for his team to make it to the playoffs.
Who, Geno or Danny?
Danny.
Who's better?
I'll give Geno over Danny.
What about you, Jim? You're the Giants fan. Would you rather have Geno or Danny Dimes?
I'm probably going to take Danny Dimes because he plays for the Giants. But look, Geno Smith.
That's what I'm saying, though. But
Geno Smith had a great year in Seattle. Geno Smith's been in the league longer. He's earned that money off of
one year? He had 1 year. He was a bust up to that.
But look, to me.
Busted in the face. So.
Look, yeah, true to that. To me, Daniel Jones had one good year. Geno Smith, as a starter, yes, had one good year, but he's shown he's capable of playing in the league. Mm-hmm. Daniel Jones has one good year. He finally cut down on the turnovers. I don't care what the market is. You're going to get this, and you're going to like it, or you can go someplace else and be a backup.
Exactly.
There'll be a team that thinks they can make him a starter, I think. There's more options than there are quarterbacks.
And good luck. The Las Vegas Raiders.
Good luck. Good luck with that.
Oh, man. All right, Jim. We won't hold you up, man. Appreciate it.
All right, Jim. See you next week, brother.
A little football and a little wrestling, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. Yo, guys, thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure.
Hey, we talk, unlike First Take, we talk hockey here on
Buffalo. That's right. Baby. We do.
We talk do. And learn.
And
look
by
it
the
up.
Way, and by the way, Michael Kay. First New York team to win a championship, the Rangers do count.
Exactly.
The Rangers do count. Unfortunately, I think the Devils are going to get them first.
Love it. All right, Jim. We'll catch you later.
Yeah, Jim.
All right, later, boys.
See you.
Later.
I don't know, man. That Jim Behringer, everybody. That was a fun one, actually. There. So I don't know.
Let me ask you, Tanner, while we're out talking franchise tags and free agents, Orlando Brown, Chief said today, Ace, peace out. Really?
They didn't want to waste the cap on it. Maybe they didn't like his play, which he didn't perform that well this year. You know,
he wants to be paid the highest tackle in the league.
Correct. And we obviously aren't going to pay that. If we're not going to pay Tyreek Hill, we're not going to pay Orlando Brown Jr. Right. So, yeah. And then we're letting Frank Clark go after 4 years as well. So that's another veteran presence and the guy that's been part of the Super Bowl run essentially as well, leaving as well. So I'm not really overly disappointed in either moves. I understand you don't want to pay the guy.
Is it Frank Clark and what's the other guy? The other defensive,
Chris Jones.
Yeah, are they paying him? Because I mean, he's high up against the cap right now too.
Yep, that's where their focus is on, is keeping that core, right? So your core is going to be Mahomes. It's going to be Chris Jones is your main two on the core side. So, and then Travis Kelce, of course. But, you know, between those three, those are the three guys you want to keep. You know, and now you got to think about it too, right? As the Chiefs, we're like, oh, we could franchise tag Orlando Brown, but that eats up, what was that, 20 mil of the cap?
Yeah, almost? Shit ton of money, yeah. Because it would be the second time they franchise tagged him too.
Correct.
It goes even up from last year.
Yeah, so you got almost 20, 25 mil. I think it's around that range. Or you can go out, you can extend Nick Bolton in your linebacking core before he has another monster year in that middle linebacker spot with his tackles and the way he performs. Yet Willie Gay, another guy you're trying to sign to extend on the play. And don't forget, Juju hasn't signed in for a receiver yet. Like, we got receivers to go about, and not that, you know, obviously we saw from last year that we don't need a big name or anything like that, but I mean, it would help. Maybe we're setting up moves here to make a trade in for that guy down in Arizona. You know,
I hope not.
Imagine that, a Mahomes and Hopkins connection.
That'd be insufferable. That is, let me ask you this. Would that be a better connection? I think so. And this is Mahomes and D Hop over Mahomes and Hill.
I do. Because
I think so too.
If you remember with Tyreek Hill, they would always throw it deep on him because he could run. But yeah. Mahomes sometimes would underthrow him, causing Tyreek have to go up and try to go get some of those balls. Well, D Hop, he's not blasting the speed by any means. But he's a guy that can go up and get the high balls, balls for those kind of receivers.
And he's a better route runner, I think.
Yes.
Tyreek is.
Yeah. I mean, Tyreek, don't get me wrong, Tyreek had amazing resources for that offense here. But if you had a D-hop in that fits the Mahomes style just a little bit more, because now you got Travis Kelce going across the middle while D-hop's going deep, doing, you know, his own Calvin Johnson impersonations in the end zone. So that's... That would be really cool if that was the case, but I think it's just more of extending working on the camp, because you got to think too, offensive line here. This will be our third year with the offensive linemen, Trey Smith, Creed Humphrey, especially those two in the middle coming into play. Those are two guys you're probably going to be looking to extend as well. So there's a lot of things happening with this cap. So I'm not disappointed in Orlando Brown not staying. You know, we can go out there and maybe we use our first round or second round pick for a left tackle, or go up and trade for one. You're sign a free agent guy, you know.
It's going to be cheaper.
I talked to Mike today, and he mentioned that a guy like Taylor Lewan could be a fill-in guy, like a pass-by, until we go get a guy. So, and it'll be a cheap option.
Hey, maybe then we can get on Busting with the Boys, you know.
Hey, there we go. That'd be fun, wouldn't it? All right, we're ready to talk some baseball and then a little bit of Saints with them at the end, because we're gonna do it for sure. So let's bring them in, Jonathan Grishman. Jonathan, what's up, dude?
How's it going, fellas?
Good.
What's up, Jonathan?
Doing good, guys. Doing good. Another night.
How's practice?
Practice was good, actually. It was good. We had all three of our teams in action practice tonight. Our 14U team that played last night, they got the day off. They had a long night. We didn't leave the ball field till about 11 o'clock, so it was a long day. So they got the day off. Our three teams got to get some work in the day.
Good. Hey, that just means if you're playing late on a Sunday, that's always a good thing. A good thing.
Oh, yeah. It was a good first tournament for that group, too. The very first tournament with us, we had about six girls join the program on there, and they got to experience some success right off the bat. So, hey, not a bad start at all.
Did you guys win?
Third place.
Top three.
Yeah.
I'll take it. I'll take top three. That's awesome, man.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's dig into it here. Coming up here, the 8th, I believe. Yes, the 8th. The World Baseball Classic starts here. Let me get out of my AEW resolution tab. I was trying to develop questions. I couldn't think of any for Jim. So,
hey, don't worry. I got it covered.
So, looking at, I got a little power ranking scene. It looks like it's across the three or four sites I saw throughout the week. I'll give you, we won't talk about these teams here, these countries that are participating: China, the Czech Republic, Australia, Nicaragua, Great Britain, Italy, Panama, Colombia, Israel, and Chinese Taipei, I believe it is, 23-11. So those are the teams, obviously, that qualify. They'll be playing, but they're not really breaking a bunch of news here, at least within our area, the U.S. So we'll just kind of quickly go down the list here and kind of give our thoughts, because there are some people that dropped out and some people that got injured as well in the meantime. So we'll see if it affects anything. So let's start here. They have number 10, which is pretty much across the board here. Canada, your boy, Freddie Freeman, you know, now, you know, the good old Dodger now.
My ex-boy right there. So. Yeah,
you know, and yeah, names like Bo Naylor. Nothing major. Cal Quantrill, Nick Pivetta, and Matt Brash on the pitching staff, but like nothing. I don't think there's anything major arm wise or even hitting wise outside of Freddie. Maybe Tyler O'Neill you can even put into play, but this Canada team could potentially do something. But I don't think it's enough. I think there's three teams that's just loaded up.
Yeah, Canada. You know, the talent level, what they used to is, when you talk about early days in the WBC, where it was when you had, you know, quite a bit of talent in MLB. It's not really that way anymore. You know, like I said, besides the star power of Freddie Freeman, yeah, but like I said, it's not a lot of the star power that we normally have seen in the past. That's from a Canadian team like that. So, I mean, are they gonna surprise? I think they could surprise, but is it likely that they could jump into the elimination rounds? I don't know. I just don't think they have enough depth. Like I said, pitching wise, to really the quality depth that's necessary to compete with some of the top countries in the WBC.
They do got Tyler O'Neill on that team as well. He's a good young kid coming up. They also
Lopez too.
Yeah, their rotation looks like it's Cal Quantrill and Matt Bush and Robson Zenzitsky. So, and John Axford, baby. I mean, 80-year-old John Ax, the X-Man, Tanner from your Brewers there, is still sticking around. So, you know, so I don't think so. I don't think anybody's expecting Canada to win this thing. So, I think 10 spots probably about right.
I agree. Enough to maybe make a threat, but not quite make a push all the way. So number 9 here is Cuba, which, again, I kind of agree on. You know, you got some of the White Sox guys there, Luis Robert, Yoan Masada, you know, Yanis Cespedes.
Yanis, I think is he still in the league?
I don't think anybody signed him. He's still with the Mets.
Is he playing?
Okay, he's been out for almost 2 years.
He's been hurt, right? Or has been hurt, and then at one time, man, that kid was, I mean, dynamite.
So he has a 3 year with the Mets. He has 3 years with the Mets still. So he played last year for 8 games, obviously, or in 2020 for 8 games. Hasn't played since.
But he's been out for 2 years. Yeah.
So, but he supposedly he's there. You know,
this says he's a free agent. This on my set.
You have, okay. Yeah. I mean, even then, as he should be, if he's out for 3 years, essentially, because of 8 games in 2020. But you got to think too, like, if he's coming back here, this is just another opportunity, a reminder of what he could be, what he could, you know, if this guy's anything remotely close to what he was in 19, you know, this would be interesting for this team.
Yeah, I'm pretty intrigued that they're at 9. Again, I know it's not, again, the talent level from what they were in the past. And, you know, they have some good quality players. But from what we normally from a Cuba team, I mean, they're usually a little bit higher up in the rankings in past years. So that's intriguing that they have them at 9. Again, it's a team that I think is a little bit deeper and a little bit more talented, that they could really upset some of the top five teams and pull off a run that could be make them, you know, one of the top teams in this tournament.
Yeah, I agree. Frank Alvarez and the pitching staff there, Yael Rodriguez and as well.
The White Sox, Johan Moncada and Luis Robert. Where's where's Yasiel Puig at?
Puig?
How come he's not this? I feel like this would be a good showcase for him. If he's trying to get back in the league. We haven't seen him in about 2 years either.
I didn't think he was
in trouble, didn't he? Puig got into some legal trouble that
one. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, he did. You're right. I think so.
I've never seen.
I thought he was. I thought he got.
Yeah, he's February 11th facing new charges in sports gambling and investigation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's.
So maybe that's why he's not on the team. That explains everything.
He ain't coming back. He ain't coming back. But there's this Cuba team. I believe I'm kind of with you, Jonathan. They have a chance to make something happen here. I really think that they're kind of a sleeper in all this here. But again, I still think there's three teams ahead of us that we'll get to that are just talent's just stupid. You know, stupid amount. So hey, let's go to number eight here. An interesting one. I never would have thought to see these guys here, but the Kingdom of Netherlands at number eight.
I was thinking of the Netherlands on that, just because you do have a lot of, at least in the Latin American players that are going to be probably representing that as well. You're going to have a lot of talent on that. That's who I was thinking was going to be at that spot there, number eight.
Yeah, Bogarts, Jonathan Schoop, Chadwick Trump, just to name a few of them.
Profar, D.D. Gregorius, Aldrelton Simmons. I mean, there's a lot of guys here. I think this team, you know, with a little bit of a bullpen here, they can make a little, definitely hold out some teams.
I just don't think they're going to score the amount of runs they need to. Again, I know you said Bogarts, but you know Simmons is not a world beater hitter. He's a very below average hitter in the big leagues. Chadwick Trump, you know, he's a Brave, but he's you know, a minor leaguer in the Braves organization, and he's not really got all. He's got a handful of days in the big leagues in 2022. Not someone that you're sitting here saying who's, you know, he's going to do a lot of work. That's up there with the elite level guys that are in the top four, top five countries. So are they going to score enough runs to compete against some of the big names? That's the one I don't know about. I mean, again, same thing is kind of like same thing with Cuba. Not as much talent as what we've seen, or in Canada at least. Not as much talent as what we've seen in the past with a team like this in this tournament, where they used to be loaded out of this team. I don't really feel that that's the case in this WBC in 2023. You got some good talent. Like I said, Bogart's one of the best shortstops offensively, but I think you're going to have a lot of issues as far as scoring runs on this team.
Kenley Jansen, your guy Kenley Jansen on this team as well.
Well, he's skipping pool play.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, but he could be added. Well, if they advance there.
Well, remember, Kenley, last time he played, I think it was the last time he played in the WBC, he was a catcher.
Mm-hmm. I believe so too. Yeah. So yeah, he's currently on the one of the guys that is skipping pool play at least. So if they advance though, we can see that guy out there. Number seven, Korea. So obviously there's a bunch of guys that will soon be in the MLB, I believe, coming into play in the next few years. But they got the KBO MVP, Jeonhoo Lee. He hit 3.349, 0.421, 0.575 with 36 doubles, 10 triples, 23 homers, 113 RBIs in his 142 games. Hyesung Kim and Tony Edman are there as well. You know, and a lot, everybody that I've read here said they have a pretty strong pitching staff. And we all know how if you have a strong pitching staff, we all know how effective that can be against really good offenses. You know, all it takes is, you know, a couple outs there just to keep the momentum going. But I guess what's your thoughts here? Because they were the runner-up in 2009 as well. And always a competitive one.
A long time ago that Korea, you know, they had that. But at the same time, I mean, I think it's going to be intriguing. I think it's going to be intriguing, and it's mostly for a lot of these teams as far as how much different is it from after a couple of years. Last time we didn't have the WBC when it was supposed to come around just because of COVID. You're going to see a lot of depth being brought out and more just because, again, we haven't seen this in a few years. So if you have quality depth, you're going to be really competitive. Korea, they're a team that's going to have quality depth on this. How much can they continue to compete against those big program, big teams and that are competing? That's to be determined. But again, it those Asian teams are very sneaky. They're very sneaky. Korea is another one of those that just they're very sound. They play well. They're very they have that continuity. That just because you know they go they have a lot of history working with each other. So it's one of those things where you can see Korea make some noise and get it deep and make a deep run itself, just because they may not be the most talented roster, but they're deep. They are going to play fundamental ball. And in a tournament like this, those are important aspects.
Is it important too, I think, because these Korea teams, like they seem to play a lot together more often than even like the United States, I feel like.
Oh, absolutely. Again, you see that all the time, like in the World Cup for soccer, you see that in a lot of these tournaments that goes on in other sports where you represent your country, that you have that kind of, again, talent's always going to be the end all be all, but you've seen times where a team has that, that togetherness, continuity, they've just been together for so long, they know each other so well, even if they haven't played together in their respective sports at that time, that they can make some noise, they can do some damage, and they can upset some teams. So Korea is no different than that. Again, a lot of the Asian teams are that way. So Korea has to be a team that you have to take seriously, just because of how they play the game. Those Asian teams just know how to play the game fundamentally sound. So they'll be a scary team that you can't take lightly just for that aspect.
Now, and something I'm sure I could ask him again when I have him on, but Freddy Sandoval, when he played for Mexico, he had a bomb and everything too. It was a rocket, but I'm curious because like Cuba, the Dominican Republic, a lot of everybody on the west side of the hemisphere, we don't see a lot of those guys on the east side, such as Korea. And, not seeing those kind of pitchers and I know Japan sees them all the time, but like the U.S., the Cuba, Dominican Republic, Mexico, some of those, Canada, like not seeing some of these guys, like you see, you'll see 10 to 10, you'll see across the countries, but not seeing a Korea guy as much as, some of the other guys. Like, I wonder how much of an advantage that has for Korea coming into play.
Not as much, because technology, you can get film on anybody at any time in any league. You can go get the KBO. We saw that during COVID. We had the Korean games going on here in America at the time. So you can get film on all those guys and be able to watch and understand and see the tendencies on that. Is it a little different than seeing them live and watching them pitch and competing in them that way? Yeah, it is different. But you're so inept to seeing it, the studying of how these players are, the tendencies on film already, because that's what they do. They have film sessions, even in baseball. You have film sessions watching pitchers and how they pitch, how they release, how the spin of the ball. So you just get the film on those guys that are on the east side of the world, and you can figure out how they pitch and what they do and be able to attack them that way.
Yeah, I guess I didn't think about all the simulations and everything like that we have nowadays in the cages. So,
oh, yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. I keep forgetting about all that cool stuff because that was pretty. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool there. All right, let's move on to Mexico here, number six. And a lot of people have claimed. I watched a couple YouTube videos on it too. This is probably the best Mexico roster out there since the World Baseball Classic started in 2006. Offense: Alejandro Kirk, Alex Verdugo, Randy Arozarena. I can't say that right. Roddy Tellez. Joey Menez, and then you got in the pitching staff, Julio Urias, Jose Urquidy, Tarion Walker, and Patrick Sandoval.
Julio Urias, did you say him?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to be the lead.
Like this Mexico team out here, like it's one, I think, honestly, one of the three. I'll pass him on the fourth team that has a chance. Still think three teams are better rostered than these guys, but this is pretty deep staff here. If you look across the two, Luis Sessa, Jesus Cruz, obviously, a lot of players play for Mexico up into the MLB. So there's a lot of definitely professionals throughout each other. I guess Jonathan, man, this has to be at least top five, right?
I didn't know Randy Arozarena was playing for Mexico. That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought that.
Yep.
Yeah, this is a young team. It's a talented team, and you have guys that are superstars that are on this team, and you have some guys that are quality players in Major League Baseball as well on this team. So They're going to be dangerous. They're going to be very dangerous. They're going to be surprised. And again, as you said, this is probably the most talented team Mexico's had. So, you know, how can they put it together to compete, you know, against against the top teams? That's going to be the one thing that's going to be very intriguing to see. But it's a very talented and young baseball team that they're putting together, something that I don't think they've necessarily had in Mexico for the WBC in the years past. So this is very intriguing, and it's going to be interesting to watch how they come out the gate. If they come out on fire, you know, early on, that's a signal that this is going to be a for real team in this tournament.
Yeah. Speaking of Randy, Arozarena, so he was born in Cuba,
right?
But defected at 19 when he was 19 in 2015 to Mexico. So that's where the Mexico part, why he's playing for Mexico. So because he lived there from 2015 to almost when he's got into the pros.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, again, you see a lot of guys who do defect Cuba and they still represent Cuba. So that's the thing on that he chose to go with Mexico.
I got an interesting one for you on this next one, then. If you like that one, wait till this one here.
It's always weird too, because I mean, there's guys find out, it's like, oh, my great. I think one year it was like Mike Piazza didn't make the roster for like when they first did it for the USA. And then he was playing on some like playing on the Italy team or some weird country. I was like, what the hell? And then it's just like, oh, well, he was, you know, third generation, fifth generation or some shit. It's like,
because the name Piazza. I mean, that makes sense.
I don't know if it was Mike Piazza. I was just throwing out a name.
You're right. It was Piazza. That I do remember. It was Piazza competing for Team Italy. You know, but again, that the name Piazza tells you that.
Yeah. It was just weird, though. You know.
Yeah. It's an odd one. I got another one for you here, right off the bat here. But we'll number five, Puerto Rico. Yadier Molina is the manager in this one. Think about that too, right?
That's wild.
Experience. I know. Thinking of that, that's who we're talking about as a manager now. It blows my mind. But you got that double play combo, Javier Baez and Francisco Lindor at the middle. Martin Maldonado behind the plate. MJ Melendez, Royal rookie last year. Played really well. Excited to see him in there. Christian Vasquez, Enrique Hernandez, Jose Miranda, and Eddie Rosario. Now, here's the fun part of this all. The 2017 WBC MVP, Marcus Stroman, right, for the U.S.
I read that article. It is interesting because he absolutely dogged the Puerto Rican fan base and media.
That's who he beat. Yeah, that's who he beat was Puerto Rico.
He chose the article that I read said that he dogged the Puerto Rico fan base and everything for how they treated his mother during the WBC, and they made threats to his mother. They were they completely harassed her, and he said I'll never play for Puerto Rico because of that. Well, he changed his mind just because he wasn't going to be on the roster for USA. He wants to play in WBC, and hopefully nobody remembers that article that time where he came out and said, all the things he did about Puerto Rico and the people there and the fans.
Yeah. All because, it's because his mother's
from Puerto Rico. Yeah. Well, she's from Puerto Rico, but like I said, they harassed her. They made threats because he chose to play for USA. And at that time, and he went out and came out and said, I'll never play for Puerto Rico. Because of how y'all treated my mom. I mean, I'd agree with that, but, as I said, you want to play in the tournament, and there wasn't a spot for USA, so go play in Puerto Rico.
I know, that's what I was thinking. I was like, so obviously there wasn't a spot. So you got to, if you wanted to play, there he can go play. And
I mean, Puerto Rico was runner ups the last World Baseball Classic, right?
Yeah,
and that was 20.
US 2017.
That was 20. Jeez, I feel like that was
COVID basically ruined the last one.
So yeah, every 3 years they do the WBC, and with 2020 being what it was.
Yep.
Yeah. I remember that. I feel like that was yesterday, but then you say 2017, I feel like that was a long time ago. So my brain is like still like,
it feels like
yesterday watching Yachty and like Javi just like point at Yachty and catch it. Remember that? That was one of the coolest plays you've ever seen in baseball. Like, I mean, Javi knew he was out and Yachty just threw a strike at him and then tag hadn't even been made yet,
Well, look, think of it this Yachty's using this as a audition to be a manager in MLB next year in 2024.
Yeah, you know, he's going to be the Cardinals' next manager. Mark my words.
Probably, I don't doubt that. I don't doubt it. I'm sure the Cardinal fan base would absolutely love that.
So also on that hitting staff or the coaching staff, Juan Gonzalez, assistant hitting coach.
Ooh, Juan Gon, baby.
And Jose Molina, first base coach, and Ricky Bones, the pitching coach there. So kind of a little stacked staff there, Puerto Rico, in this here. But yeah, kind of going down the roster again here. Like I said, Francisco Lindor is there, Edwin Diaz, Javier Baez, MJ Melendez, and Maldonado there behind the plate. But the pitching staff over here, you know, Jorge Lopez, who at times he can be good. Edwin Diaz, Alex Diaz, Fernando Cruz, Jose Berrios, who has a lot to prove to see after that stinky season last year. Jose Berrios has tons to prove here in this World Baseball Classic. So I think all eyes are going to be on him mainly for that team there. I guess, I mean, we stand. What do you think here? Puerto Rico stand chance?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They could win it. They could win it. They're kind of, I mean, they could very win it all.
They'll be contenders for sure. Are they a favorite to win it? I don't necessarily think so.
But they're
one of the teams that is deep. They're talented. They have, you know, and again, as I said, you know, if you're deep with your players, the roster has just got deep quality talent in this tournament, you're going to have a chance. And Puerto Rico is one of those teams that's every year they're a contender for this tournament.
Are you guys surprised? And maybe it's just a me thing. I know Yachty's, you know, retired this past season. I'm a little surprised this isn't like his last hurrah as a catcher. Instead, he's managing. I know, Jonathan, you said, hey, it's a good audition for him, which I think you're right. But I'm a little surprised he's not playing. Just one last hurrah and some shit that don't really mean much.
I think it's more towards the respect for the Cardinals. I mean, he retired as a Cardinal. He retired from baseball as a Cardinal. I think that's more of the respect that he spent his entire career playing for them. Yes, you want to represent your country. I wish I would have ever had the opportunity to do that in any aspect of it. But he gets to represent his country in a different way as a manager at the same time, as I said, auditioning for a manager position in 2024 after this season. So, you know, I think it's more of just, hey, I respect the Cardinals organization so much that I retire from baseball as a Cardinal, and I'm going to do the next chapter of my baseball life, starting it now with Puerto Rico. So he ended his career with the respect of the Cardinals organization, but he's starting the next chapter of his career as a manager with Puerto Rico.
Yeah, I agree.
Fair enough.
And it is confirmed. He is not a player manager. He is only a manager in this World Baseball Classic, just so everybody is aware. So
until he turns a scorecard in, he puts his name as a catcher when they need it.
Hey, I'm coming in, but you're not. I'm coming in. Oh man. Next up, Venezuela at number four, guys. Jose Altuve, Ronald Acuna, Jose Abreu, Andres Jimenez.
I mean, you just listed an all-star team right there.
I have to go. Oh, Salvador Perez, by the way, behind the plate for this team. What else? Luis Arraez, David Peralta, Miguel Rojas, Miguel Cabrera are in there as well. Like, what else do you want from this team offensively?
This is probably what we've seen from Puerto Rico in the 2017 Puerto Rico team. This is what we're seeing with Venezuela. Like, it's just a loaded roster. So, like I say, we've seen Puerto Rico compete for championships year in and year out. I think this is the team that will probably be one of the representatives in the championship in this tournament, just because, again, they're absolutely loaded top to bottom, talent-wise, hitters, you know, speed on that. You have Acuna leading off, if anything, batting second. And that's something that, you know, with his speed and power that he has, you have defense that you throw. You said Salvador Perez, you know, behind the plate, one of the better catchers in this tournament as well. So, I mean, this is kind of what we've seen from Puerto Rico years ago, that what Venezuela is now. And that's a dangerous, dangerous team to try to go up against.
Jonathan, let me ask you this. As a Braves fan, are you worried about Acuna here coming back from that injury and him kind of playing in this WBC?
No, I'm actually I'm looking at it a different way. I'm looking at it, he is actually 100% healthy, and he's confident that he can go and play in this and use this as an example of, hey, I'm back. So if he was not committed to play, like he was fighting the Braves to be able to play, if he was not like saying, yeah, I want to go play. And he was just like, maybe I'm not really sure if I'm ready. I'd be more concerned about that than him saying, hey, I'm good. I'm ready to go. Let me go play in the WBC. Let me show y'all let me remind y'all that I am one of the top five baseball players in the league right now. So I'm encouraged. The injury he had was such a freak injury in Miami, on jumping for a ball that he does for the last 4 or 5 years, that it just was that one awkward landing he did. It was such a freak injury. ACL injuries in baseball are usually a freak injury. So I'm not necessarily worried about it. If he got through 2022 with really no setbacks, and he did get through it with no setbacks, then the 1 year is gone now. So he's 100%. I'm ready. I'm ready to see him be that way. I'm ready to see the old Ronald Acuña back.
I'm with you. I'm with you there. All right, number three, the defending champs, USA.
USA, USA, USA.
Of pitching of Lance Lynn, Adam Wainwright, Miles Mikolas, Kyle Freeland, Brady Sr. By the way, Brady Sr. is blowing it up in spring training right now with a lot of Ks, so that's what I like to hear. Mixed in Nick Martinez, Merrill Kelly, Ryan Presley, Devin Williams, Kendall Graveman, JT Romano, Will Smith on the catchers, Pete Alonso, Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, Trey Turner, Mookie Betts, Kyle Tucker, Kyle Schwarber, Mike Trout. Don't forget they added Bobby Witt Jr. to that. Mookie Betts is in there, Kyle Schwarber, Kyle Tucker, and they're led by Mark DeRosa as the manager. Ken Griffey Jr. is your hitting coach. Andy Pettitte is your pitching coach. Michael Young's your batting practice pitcher. Repeat.
I'm trying to think of the other country that's ahead of that. I know Japan, but I'm trying to think who would be better than the USA in this. You have speed, you have power in your lineup again, and you have good defense where you throw Betts out there. I think you said Arenado's on the roster.
On there.
Jim
Anderson.
I mean, Trey Turner at shortstop. I mean, where's the holes as far as offensively? Pitching wise, I can understand a little bit as far as pitching wise because again, you have an older Adam Wainwright. You don't have the young superstar pitchers that we've seen in the game for the United States as established as what we've seen in the years past. What we have, I know Wainwright's just up there. No Kershaw. When Kershaw was supposed to be on the roster, something happened that he backed out. Even with Kershaw, I still would have been a little bit uneasy just because if this was Kershaw from 7 years ago, different story. If it's Wainwright from 7 years ago, different story. Mm-hmm. So the pitching does make me a little worried as far as the quality, as far as superstar pitching that we've known the USA to have in years past. But offensively, this is probably again one of the top offensive teams that you're going to have in this tournament. You have speed, you have power, you have contact hitting somewhere all around that lineup. So it's going to be a hard out 1 through 9. But the pitching side, I can see it's a little bit of a concern in the starting rotation. Bullpen, they got arms. They got arms for days in that bullpen. So I'm not necessarily worried about that side of it.
Devin Williams in there for relief as well. Yeah. So that'll be good.
The only team they have that's really competitive in the pool that we talked about is Mexico. I know Canada's in their pool too, but I just don't see any team in their pool, to give them any sort of trouble. I think they should be able to get out of the pool no problem.
I agree with that. I agree. I mean, Mexico's their toughest contest. But I just don't think they're going to have the talent level to beat the United States just from top to bottom how the lineup is.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
What, number two. If it's Japan, what the hell's – I'm like Jonathan just said, like Japan, and then who's
– We have two more teams. Well, I'll tell you who the one and two are.
Number two, if not Japan, then you have the Dominican Republic coming up next then.
Who do you think's next?
Is it the DR?
Japan's number two. Yeah, so led by Yu Darvish, Shohei Ohtani, and then Yoshinobu Yamamoto. He has 1.68 ERA, 0.93 WHIP, 205 strikeouts, and 193 NPB innings last season. And Roki Sasaki, 2.02 ERA, 0.80 WHIP, 173 strikeouts, and 129 1/3 innings last year as well. They have a couple guys here with 56 homers. Muneta
Murakami.
But you also got Otani on pitching and offense as well, so that's going to help out stuff right there. Cubs, right? But your Seiya Suzuki for the Cubs, he had an oblique injury.
Yeah, he's hurt. He's out. Yeah, he's out.
So they got Cardinals slugger Lars Nootbaar.
He's
on the squad.
Suzuki's just going to recruit Otani to the Cubs next year.
Is that what it's going to be? Is that the next move?
It's his lone purpose. Just get Otani to the Cubs.
So Japan, since it's all started, they're the only ones with two wins in the they've won it twice. The only country that's won it twice. USA has a chance to do it this year, but they're the only team that has won it twice.
They could win it. Japan could win it three times.
06 and 09. So they're the first. They're the ones that were first back to back in this. So, I mean, obviously, a country that plays baseball, is fashion on baseball. They love baseball over there. You see a lot of players go over there as well to play, or vice versa. You know, I don't even know what to say on this. Like, I feel a USA, but I feel a little bias in that should be better. Obviously, there's a lot of talent over there in Japan. I guess, what's your thoughts here, Jonathan?
You're going to see there's going to be a handful of guys who are not in the MLB right now that are on that team. They're going to be heading in the MLB in the next, you know, three to four years. There's a couple kids that are on that team that, you know, and I say kids, I mean, they're in their early 20s right now, and they'll be, you know, 23, 24, 25 by the time they come over here, and they're going to light it up. I mean, I love watching Japan baseball. I love it. The first time a quick story for y'all, I ever got to see a Japanese baseball team. I was like 10 years old, and the under 21 Japanese baseball team came to New Orleans to play Tulane University. My dad got to umpire that game. And you talk about, I said about Korea just a second ago, about how they play, you know, flawless baseball, like fundamental baseball. In Korea, Japanese baseball, they play flawless fundamental baseball. It is beautiful to watch those guys throw, field, hit, everything. It's in sync. So like a orchestra, in a theater. It is absolutely wonderful to watch, to be able to see, just have practice. I played with a few Japanese teammates, and they were telling me stories about how they practice and everything, how, like I said, orchestrated it was. It was absolutely magnificent to actually get a chance to see that live as a kid. This is going to be a dangerous team just because you have Otani. Otani's the best baseball player, you know, if not the best baseball player. He's one of the top three best baseball players in MLB. You have Yu Darvish, who he's regained his stardom from what he was with the Rangers and what he's doing in San Diego now. And the unknown of the hitters, how many good hitters they have.
Yeah.
They are going to be scary to say. They're a threat. I'll just say that. I don't think there's any of the words I could put out there to explain that to Japan. They are a threat for the championship this year in WBC.
Yeah, I agree.
There's a lot.
I think they could win it all.
Than the others, a lot more lefties I'm seeing on this roster.
I think too. I know we kind of talked about this earlier, but there is something about the way their windup is, like the pitchers with the Japanese and Korean pitchers. I know you could simulate that and watch it all you want, but until you see it, I mean, Jonathan, you could talk a little bit about the experience from, because you know me and Tanner. I don't know about Tanner, but I haven't played baseball since I was maybe a junior high school, and nobody's throwing like they do. But like until you see that windup, that you can't simulate that stuff.
No, you can't, and it's just it's so
unique, right? We don't see that shit over here.
Yeah, but it's so scientific, like how they are able to utilize their body to create the energy necessary to be able to pitch. It's so smooth. We see American pitchers. They're creating so much force when we pitch. You know, you're training guys to try to use the body so much to create that force. Japanese pitchers, it's not about force. It's just about letting the body move. It's almost being fluid and letting that fluidity just carry your pitch over. It's something else to be able to see and be able to compete against. I faced a couple of Japanese pitchers, in my career, and it's It's different. It's absolutely different. So you see a lot of guys who have some success. Now, again, over time, you get used to seeing that. We've seen that with guys, and they kind of, Daisuke K for a while when he came to the big leagues. Kenshin Kawakami, who pitched for the Braves at one point.
Chandler Park, a couple of those guys.
You have some success, and then you get used to seeing it and everything like that. But it's just the uniqueness is so it's so wonderful to be able to see because again it's different and it's once you understand what they're doing and why they're doing it, you're like I get it. I completely understand. I get it.
And I think that's why it favors them in this short tournament, right? It's like it's different pitchers, and you're not the guys aren't seeing that same pitcher like you said. With like guys, once they come in the league, they get that momentum down. They're used to that windup. But this is a short tournament. It's a sprint, and it's not a course of 162 games. You're not going to see the same guy five or six times. You really might you see him twice, if that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. It's fascinating. Like I said, I love the Japanese baseball. Little fun fact: did y'all know about Yu Darvish? He actually so part of his training to pre-pitch for bullpens. He throws long toss. He throws his regular warm up and throwing long toss right handed, and then actually does the same thing going back left handed.
Wow.
You Darvish?
He throws 92, 93 left handed.
He's got like 12 pitches.
What?
He does a regular warm up, like, warm up throwing, and then he'll go long toss, throw about 250, 260 feet, and then he'll work back in, and then he'll get a lefty glove, and he does the same thing working back left handed.
Ah, oh, that's probably why he sucked one year for the Cubs. He was pitching left-handed and nobody realized it.
It's just the Cubs, Nick. That's all it was. Oh, my. I had no idea in that.
So, it's about being in sync with the body. Like they are so in tune with how their body works and how their body moves. And it's just the culture of Japan. It's the same thing. Like, a couple of guys I play with, the pitchers and one other reason why Japanese pitchers struggle coming in America because we pitch on 5 days rest. Japanese pitch on 6 days rest.
Yeah.
They also, what they do is, I don't know how much y'all know about how bullpens are being thrown in my professional. Japanese pitchers throw 100 pitch bullpens a day. So, and they'll have an off day. They're like the fifth day, they'll have an off day and they go pitch on the sixth day. They have their rest day, and then they'll do a 100-pitch bullpen, 100-pitch bullpen, 100-pitch bullpen, off day, and then pitch again. And it's just that's why they said they come here. A couple of guys have said when you have Japanese pitchers come here to America and they don't pitch like that here, they have arm issues. Like Kenshin Kawakami had arm issues. Dice K had arm issues at one point. Matsui at one point had some arm issues because they don't throw like they do in Japan, and they prepare their body that way. It's not done here in America.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Wow, I actually had no idea on that.
What's a number one team, Tanner? Since we can't figure it
I'll
out,
I'll let you take a guess. Dominican Republic is number one, top to bottom. I mean, probably right up there with the USA, honestly. They also, by the way, this is also a country that needs one more win to be part of the two-win club of the WBC. So just not back-to-back like Japan. So hopefully the USA can do this. But here's what we got. NL Young, Cy Young winner, Sandy Alcantara, and Astros Christian Javier on the rotation. This has got Johnny Cueto still pitching. Ronzi Contreras, a really star prospect out there, is also doing it. Camilo Duvall, Rafael Montero. There's actually a lot of depth in this
yep. here. They're outfielders. Jesus. Julio Rodriguez,
Juan Soto.
Eloy Jimenez, Juan Soto.
Wander Franco, Jeremy Pena, Ketel Marte, Willie Adames, Teoscar Hernandez. They did lose Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Obviously, that was a big weapon. But I feel there's just enough power just to keep this ball rolling.
Where were they? I mean, Jesus, they're off. Their lineup is loaded.
Javier, Rafael Montero, both from Houston. Hector Neris, Gregor Soto. Like, Gregory Sanchez is in this. Francisco Mija. I don't know. Like, what's your thoughts here, man?
Good luck.
Juan Soto.
I mean, that's good luck.
Nelson Cruz is your DH.
Yeah, I mean,
Palm Central.
I say good luck. I mean, that's an all-star team. That is an absolute all-star team. The outfield, that's disgusting. You have Soto and Rodriguez in the same outfield. You have and Eloy Jimenez, who he's just the third wheel of that group, essentially in the outfield. And that's disgusting. That's absolutely disgusting to say. So I mean, like I said, good luck. When I asked the question who's better than the United States or what that, I it didn't register me about the Dominican, and I forgot how many players they have that's on that team that's out there. That's an all-star team.
Look at this guy here, Cano Robinson. Robinson Cano. He's here. He's 40. On this
team. Oh, he's handing out steroids. He's standing out steroids there.
I know what he's doing, shooting in the leg again.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Robinson Cano. Just for he's been falling off out of it over the last couple of years. But I mean, he's there to help mentor those young guys. He's there to
he's helping them.
They can't catch you if you do this.
But I mean, like I said, that's a star-studded team, and that's what the WBC so much fun, because again, you don't see these guys compete in the Olympics. They don't get to compete in the Olympics.
Yeah, no.
You know, so you don't get to see these guys represent their country. That's what makes this so much fun, and I love that Major League Baseball decided to do this years ago and bring this into the game. And allow these guys to represent their country. Like I said, I wish I would have had the opportunity. I wish I would have been able to get a chance to represent my country, whether it was in the Olympics or even in the WBC. I wasn't good enough. I'll just go ahead and admit that. But at the same time, it's that pride. It's that fun that you get to go and represent your country. You get to go be with your fellow countrymen in the league. The guys, like you said, you're getting Rodriguez and Soto on the same team. They compete against each other, but you're getting them on together. You're getting to see Mike Trout compete with Nolan Arenado and the guys on Team USA. That is so much fun. And so I love this tournament. I love that they're getting to do this. And it just brings and what they're hoping to do is, again, brings more fans to what the game is supposed to be and make the international feeling. Baseball is the international sport that it's supposed to be. It garners the world attention.
So
is Vlad Jr. not on that team, the DR team, and did he pull out?
He pulled out.
Oh, he pulled out. Okay.
I think he got hurt, actually.
Yeah, I could be wrong on this, if he had a knee injury that just kind of flared up on him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was the last couple of days it happened on it. So, but if you're looking here, like Dominican Republic, they're in the same pool as Puerto Rico, Venezuela, Israel, and Nicaragua.
That's a tough Puerto Rico. Oh. That's a tough pool.
So you're gonna have you potentially will have one of the three of Dominican, Puerto Rico, or Venezuela not advance.
Yeah,
that's a tough.
God,
that's a tough pool. Yeah, so, that might be the toughest pool to be in. Like that's
Pool D. Pool C: USA, Mexico, Colombia, Canada, Great Britain.
USA should win that easily.
Should win that. It should be USA, Mexico.
Yeah. I would not be surprised. Again, Canada could be a team that could knock off Mexico just because they have some decent talent. They can pull up the upset, but I think it's going to be USA and Mexico out of that one.
Right. Pool B is Japan, Korea, Australia, China, and the Czech Republic.
Yeah, Japan and Korea should
go through pretty easy. And then Pool A is Chinese, the Tapia, Netherlands, Cuba, Italy, and Panama.
Yeah, Cuba and the Netherlands should be it. Cuba for sure.
Should be.
Cuba, I'd say the Netherlands. I think their offense still doesn't scare me like it has in the past in this tournament. But I'll say the Netherlands will advance as well.
Yeah, it's. I think this will be a pretty cool match. It looks like they're playing in Miami, Phoenix, Taichung, and Tokyo. So, in case you guys want to know locations,
Jonathan, you gotta give us your winner, or you can give us our two teams in the final.
Well, I mean, you're not gonna have probably Dominican. It's gonna be Dominican or Puerto Rico, so you're gonna eliminate one of those top teams out of this. So, I feel like I have to almost say USA just to represent the country. I think I'd like to see USA and Japan. I think that would be an interesting matchup. It brings the stars that you have between with Shohei on that stage with Yu Darvish, and it brings an interesting, intriguing matchup that you put together: United States versus Japan. So I'd like to see that matchup. I'll go and say USA and Japan in the championship.
I was going to say the same thing, actually.
I'm going to go Dominican Republic, and I'm going to say I have to feel like I have to say USA. So I could say the Japan and the DR, but I'll say USA and the DR. And I think the DR actually went. I'm a little worried about USA's pitching staff, like you alluded to, Jonathan. Very old. You know, these guys are you know, their arms aren't going to be all warmed up or anything like that. So I'm a little worried about it.
One thing that is going to go for him, again, you don't need Wainwright to go 6-7 innings. You have such a deep and talented bullpen that if Wainwright can get you 4-5 and you stretch out the game with your bullpen, you have a chance on that. It's the same thing with the starting pitchers on there. So if you can get 5 innings and turn it over to the bullpen with, you know, with what you have in there and the stable that you got, you have a chance from there. But if you try to push those guys, you know, 7 innings, yeah, you're in trouble on that. So I think the strategy is going to be go 5 innings, maybe go 4, and let's get the bullpen involved at that point.
Yep. First game starts tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Central, 11 p.m. Eastern on Fox Sports 1. So excited for it to get way. I'm actually probably going to be watching some of this here, especially late at night. So nice little deal there. So, all right, we got about 5 minutes left or so. Let's talk about it. How you feeling? How you feeling as a Saints fan? You like this Derek Carr move?
I've been asked that all day from everybody. I like it because it gives the Saints the opportunity to compete, and you're now the favorite in the division. I don't like it because I have been an advocate of rebuilding. I'd rather rebuild, reset your salary cap, because we've been in salary cap hell for God knows how long. We've been in purgatory basically as long as we can remember, with Drew Brees and Sean Payton at the helm, and now, you know, Dennis Allen. You know, we're do you compete for a division title now? Yes. Do you compete for a Super Bowl now? No, I don't think so. I don't think this team is quite ready, and it goes to the back to the coaching staff that we have. We don't have a Super Bowl contending coaching staff. So you have the players that you can potentially put it together, but you don't have all of the pieces to be a Super Bowl contender. And that goes to the staff, the coaching staff. So I'm on the side of that. You have you're the third oldest roster in the league. At some point, you have to turn that roster over and get younger. Why continue kicking the can down the road and saying, we have a Super Bowl roster? We don't have a Super Bowl roster, though. We thought we had one last year. And we were proven wrong. And I get quarterback was a different issue. And then we have Derek Carr. Derek Carr is better than what we had. Derek Carr is better than Winston. He's better than Dalton. I get that side of it. But you still have an older roster with a coaching staff that has no clue on how to run a team to a playoff contending opportunity. We had a playoff opportunity last year, and we failed. So at some point, if this fails, it sets us back another 4 years, because Carr's got a no-trade clause in his contract for the next 4 years, and you're essentially stuck kicking the can down the road for the next 4 years trying to prove that you have a Super Bowl contending team. I reset, rebuild, and start over, and let things kind of develop for the future from there. You can be a contender now and for the future if you do that. Instead, we're trying to be a contender now with a chance that it blows up in our face, and we are now, you know, back where we were in the 70s.
You would feel like this signing means there's moves on the way. You know,
they don't have money. I don't even know how they signed Derek. I guess they're cutting Jameis Winston. They're going to have to rework Mike Thomas's deal or cut him. Mike
Thomas could be on the move. There could be some more casualties on the way.
Thomas is not going to go anywhere now because of this deal. You sign Carr with telling him you're going to have a superstar receiver. Olave's not there yet. So you kind of
you can't tell him that with Michael Thomas either, because Michael Thomas can't stay on the damn field.
You know, Thomas is established. Thomas, he's established. He's a record holder receiver, though.
Established 5 years ago.
I get it, but I mean, at the same time, he's you're not selling Carr on Chris Olave right now. That's just not that's not enough.
I think it's gonna be a building block for the draft and some of the offseason moves here.
They're gonna have to rework his deal, though. That's all I'm saying about Mike Thomas. They can't.
I feel like Mike Thomas has to be on the move, because they just signed Passanio to an extension, luckily.
what they're going to do is they're going to basically rip up the contract now that Thomas has and absolutely start over and say, you're going to take a pay cut. If you don't take a pay cut, then we're going to release you from the contract that we originally have with you, and we'll save that money. We'll be a post-June first cut, and we'll save that money from there. If you want to be in New Orleans, you're going to have to do a completely new deal from there. And that's a pay cut. And so if he wants to take a pay cut, okay, then he'll stay in New Orleans. If he doesn't want to take a pay cut, Saints are going to release him as a June 1st cut and say, all right, hey, we appreciate the 1 year you had that you went off for us. But, you know, you got to make a lot of moves. You got to make moves. Again, Andres Pete's another one. How do you, you know, he's going to be another cap casualty. Jameis Winston's going to be a cap casualty. Mike Thomas could be. You know, you've got to get some moves going.
Alvin Kamara could be, like.
Kamara's not. Kamara won't be a released or anything like that. He could be traded, but he won't be. It won't be until 2024.
Could be suspended.
That's why you can't trade him right now, because nobody's going to want him at that point for only for missing 6 to 8 games or whatever, depending on what the NFL does.
Put him on the commissioner's list?
Yeah, the commissioner's exempt list. Yeah,
well, that's if they're still investigating on that. So if they're not giving him a suspension until the season starts, then they put him on a commissioner exempt list from there, and basically they count the games, how many games he's missed towards the suspension at that point. But if they hand down a suspension in June, well, then he's suspended. He'll be on the suspended list from there. So, which at that point, again, nobody's going to want to trade for him, and you only get him for half a season at that point. But he could be a release. He could be a cap casualty for 2024 because dead money starts getting a little bit lower on him at that point.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have a good feeling of where the direction is for the Saints team, because I think they're kidding themselves saying that they're a Super Bowl contending team. I get you signed Tyrann Mathieu. You have Cam Jordan. You have DeMario Davis. You have a good defense, but it's an old defense though. You know, yeah, I just named the three guys that are well known on that defense, and they're all in their mid 30s right now or early 30s. You know, with Davis at 36, Jordan's 34, Tyron's 31 or 32, I think 31 years old. So you're playing with fire with an older group. That how much longer do you have to keep them, competitive for a Super Bowl title, let alone the division title? Then that's why they did that, because they know the division is absolutely atrocious right now. You have the best quarterback in the division in Derek Carr when compared to Desmond Ridder, Kyle Trask, and at the moment right now, Matt Corral in Carolina. That may change here pretty soon once free agency starts and kind of things get a little bit moving and then the draft happens. But it's a move that it makes sense for Derek Carr. Mm-hmm. You get out of the AFC West. You're out of, you know, competing against Pat Mahomes and Justin Herbert. You know, it would have been if you went to New York, you're competing against Josh Allen and Tua Tagovailoa. Go to New Orleans and your competition is basically a rookie that at Carolina, Kyle Trask, and a rookie in Desmond Ridder that didn't, all of them that had either didn't play at all or had a very terrible start to his career.
By the way. I don't know how much I don't barely believe it, but Dove Kleiman, he's a writer, editor out there for the NFL world, says Tom Brady might not be done after all playing in the NFL. According to the Rich Eisen show, he talked to people in Indy. And of course, everybody is saying, keep an eye on Miami still. Still.
I think he's done. There's no, he doesn't come back.
He comes back.
There's no way. He's not Brett Favre in it, is he?
This is like a Drew Brees situation, though, because Buccaneers still hold the rights.
He's a free agent. He'd have been a free agent.
Yeah.
Cap casualty? Like, if he came back, it would have been better for the Bucs than it is.
Yeah, his contract is up. He's a free agent now.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I thought it was.
Indy's drafting a quarterback. Jim Irsay said, we're done doing the quarterback search that, you know, each year for veteran quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah. No.
So that's out of the way. Tua, Dolphins are already kind of talking to Tua about extension. I don't see that either. Tom's done. He's done. Let him retire. You know, if he comes back after what he did again, like, you know, with a video that said, "Hey, I'm done and this is for real," and he comes back 40 days later, I mean, at some point, At some point, we got to start questioning Tom, you know, what his intentions are at this point in the league. Is, you know, what is else he got to play for? He's got the most Super Bowls. He's got all the records. What else does he have to prove to the league at this point? I, you know, he's already won a Super Bowl without Bill Belichick. So what else is there for you to do?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing. I don't think he's coming back. I think he's done.
I agree.
All right, Jonathan, we're going to let you go, man. We're going to wrap up here. Appreciate you hopping on, talking a little World Baseball Classic. We'll continue on our big Major League event as we break down each division next week here. So,
as always, guys, always appreciate the time with
you. See you, Jonathan. Best of luck to you all this weekend.
Yeah, man.
Definitely, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Jonathan. Thank you.
See ya.
Jonathan Grishman, everybody. Oh, man, always a blast. Yeah, there's a... That now we're seeing, like, supposedly Joe Mixon shot a kid today. I don't know, dude. I can't tell if it's troll or not. I'm trying to find more info.
I was gonna say Joe Mixon and John Morant hanging out together.
That's what I'm saying. Well, there was one. If it is not a troll, I apologize on this, but one guy was like, hey, yeah, Joe Burrow delivering the gun to Joe Mixon today to just go shoot a kid. Jesus. So bad.
I don't think it's true. Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll have to wait for more details. But, man, Nick, what you got coming up?
Thursday, just the Bodka Show. Me and Johnny B talking all the things in sports, what's happened in the past week or so. There'll be a show on Sunday with special guests. Not too sure who Dan is cooking up. And that's pretty much it. Tomorrow, I think I got to double check, but I'm on the, I don't know what it's called, but the Alan Perales show, maybe?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to be on there tomorrow. So.
Yeah, I was on, I think, first episode.
Huh? So, oh, yeah. Yeah. First one, yeah. Yeah, something about a mock draft, I guess. I'm not too sure, but.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh, a little mock.
Yeah, I guess Dan asked me so if I'd come on, so that's that is tomorrow, so. Awesome, I'll be on the Alan Perales show. Looking forward to that. So he's kind of trying to work his way into the community and, you know, always try to help out everybody in the Let's Talk Sports community anytime anybody asks me to come on.
I'm with you there, man. I got to possibly hop on a baseball show. Depends on the time if I'm still working or not, but we'll see. But Dan and Jonathan tomorrow, Wednesday, got the buffoons here. We're going to be talking obviously a little bit about the combine, the draft coming up. We'll talk about the end of the franchise tag as tomorrow is the final day for the NFL franchise tag. So we'll be keeping an eye out that so we can report that to you Wednesday. And then Thursday, we're going to do a big NCAA show this time. And it sounds like everybody should be ready this time around. And like last Thursday, we'll get them all on. Keith, Bobby, G, Ashton, Nix. Dan says he has a special guest for me, a former coach, former recruiter.
Ooh, nice.
Psychologist. Hey, if you have son, I'm all for it. I'm going to try to get JG's bro on too, Troy. I'll send him a message tomorrow on it. And then Saturday in the hoops will actually be hosted by JG and Mr. Settle, Mike Settle there, as I got my daughter's birthday party weekend. So,
oh, nice. Happy birthday.
Caught up there. So, till Monday. So, but there's a lot of cool stuff here coming to play. I'm working on a series that I'll probably start releasing in 2 weeks, right before I leave for a week for Milwaukee. So it'll be kind of breaking down different players, getting ready for the draft in the end of April. So kind of a little player series for everybody. So kind of excited to get that going here here in a couple of weeks. So. Anyways, guys, thank you for watching. Thank you for paying attention. Make sure you guys like, subscribe.
A special shout out to my daughter real quick. Today's her birthday.
Happy birthday.
Jordan Marie, 11 years old today.
Happy birthday.
11 years old. She is the middle child of the Bodkins bunch. So happy 11th birthday to my lovely daughter. Oldest daughter.
Your daughter's birthday was on a Monday. Mine's on next Monday. So
nice.
Back-to-back birthdays. So make sure you guys like, subscribe, follow, leave a comment on what you guys think. Also in the World Baseball Classic stuff as well. And we'll catch you next Monday. See you guys.